Welcome to this week's episode of Off the Assembly Line. I'm your host, Rebecca Reed, and every week I sit down for possibility-sparking conversation with innovative educators and entrepreneurs who are bringing the future to education, one beautiful disruption at a time. Hey everyone, we've got a mini milestone here. This is episode 5. Thanks so much for coming along for the ride so far, for listening, for sharing, and a special thanks to those who have rated and reviewed. If you're enjoying the podcast so far, reviewing and sharing with your network are the two best ways to support the work and make it easier for others to find. If you're not sure how to review, just go to offtheassemblyline.co and you'll see a pretty sizable button right in the middle of the page that'll take you right to it. Today I'm talking with STEAM education advocate and thought leader, Wydad Lukeman. Wydad has been an educator for nearly 20 years, working with students, teachers, administrators, and districts across the U.S., and has recently founded a nonprofit called Coding Out of Poverty. It's a platform that empowers students from around the globe to use STEM and STEAM skills to create growth and opportunity no matter their circumstance. This episode is all about the power of experiential learning and global perspective. I highly recommend listening, taking notes, and sharing the conversation, even if you're not in the education sector. It's just that good. Let's get into it.
Okay, so Wydad, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Looking over all of your experience, your work in STEM, your work in STEAM, over the last, I don't even know how many years, maybe 20 or so years, it led me to the question, what haven't you done?
Well, I don't know. The world is grand, Rebecca. So there's a lot of things I haven't done. And every time I think I've done it all, I realized I haven't even scratched the surface. There's just so many great opportunities and so much learning that's out there that I can't really tell you what I haven't done. There's just so much out there. And then having opportunities in which I've been able to kind of travel abroad and, you know, join other educators and administrators internationally, I realize that there's just so much more to the educational platform that we haven't even gotten to. So I don't know what I haven't done, but I'll call you in a year and I'll let you know.
Right. Tell me when you know. It's really is like every step forward just broadens our perspective, right? It's like each step forward just reveals a wider world. So I completely understand what you're talking about there.
Yeah, I was going to say you open a door and then you think you've entered a room. And in fact, you've entered another room that has 75 different other doors.
Yes.
And so whether, you know, I'm learning a new way to integrate, you know, actual, you know, CAD computer aided design in the classroom or computer science coding or 3D printing, you just open a door and you realize there's all these other doors that there are there for you to open should you want them.
Yes, that's exactly the picture. Would you share a little bit about your journey in education and as a STEAM advocate, you know, up to this point?
Sure. I started off in education at a very young age when I took my first job as a tutor. I think I was around 14 and 15 years old. Shortly after that, I graduated high school, and fresh out of high school, I joined Dearborn Public Schools and took a job as a paraprofessional working with kindergartners and English language learners. And that was predominantly in the area where I had grown up as a child and actually went to school myself. So at that time, I was still hoping and pursuing a degree in pharmacy. I come from a family line of doctors and things like that. So I was thinking I was going to follow the footsteps of medicine. But once I got into the actual instructional platform where you're working with kids, I fell in love and just couldn't leave. And I changed my career path and pursued a degree in education. And from there, I ended up, you know, working in the same district that I went to school, in the same area and in the same school. So I started working there as a teacher. And then and that was in the south end of Dearborn. And that area, if anyone's not familiar with it, is predominantly high immigrant. It's a revolving door for new incoming immigrants, refugees, and so on and so forth. So I was able to work in that community. And that was extremely fulfilling for me, especially because I myself am a minority. And so as I got to working there after a while, I wanted more. And I remember being a student there, I had that same desire. I wanted more opportunity. I was hungry for that. And I was hungry for that now at an older age for my students. And so I started seeking out opportunities where I would want to broaden my horizon with professional developments and trainings and conferences. And I had attended a conference that was in Colorado. It's called the Experiential STEM Conference. And that conference absolutely changed my life. It was all about engaging students in STEM, but using experiential learning opportunities to kind of foster that concrete, pictorial, abstract learning approach, but with a hands-on kind of dive in. And it completely changed my philosophy in education. And so I kept pursuing more and more knowledge, more and more conferences. And then I found myself working with PLTW, code.org, and just more doors kept opening. And the more doors that opened, the more opportunities I had. And lo and behold, here I am years later, I find myself working and training teachers on a national level on STEM curriculums, conducting district transformations and helping school districts around the U.S. offer more STEAM learning opportunities to their students. I'm a member of the My Coding team in the state of Michigan, consulting and training Michigan teachers and administrators on the importance of computer science instruction and integration. I became Michigan's first and only Verizon Innovative Learning Lab instructor, which was truly eye-opening because then I was able to offer innovative learning labs to Michigan kids, teaching them anything from 3D printing and virtual reality and artificial intelligence to holograms, augmented reality, and robotics. So all these experiences and opportunities kind of opened my eyes up to an even greater understanding of kind of the needs, but also the gaps and holes in our public education and the equity issues that we have. And I've had the unique opportunity, too, to work with, like, the K-12 sector and then the university and industry. And all that allowed me to kind of see the demands of the future workforce and how our educational systems are or are not, you know, getting our kids ready for it. And so it sparked my journey into STEAM advocacy. And, you know, here I am.
So that's exactly what I'm talking about when I say, what haven't you done? There's just been, you know, so many different projects and initiatives and facets, you know, of STEM and STEAM education that you've really been a part of. And I have a lot of questions now after the story that you just shared. And I want to go back to what you said about that first experience at the Experiential STEM Conference and how taking what you learned there and applying it in your classroom changed your philosophy of education. What was the difference that you were seeing in your students after changing some of what you were doing, you know, compared to what you were seeing before? What was the major benefit to them?
So as a teacher, you teach and you know how it is. When you're an educator, you hit that five-year mark and you're like, what am I doing? You're trying to navigate between the demands of the classroom and the demands of, you know, administration and the demands of the state that you're working in, whether they're implementing new standards or pushing down more standardized assessments. You're still trying to do what you wanted to do when you got into education, right? Because we all know we don't get into it for the money. Mm-hmm. You get into it for the passion. And so for me at that point, it was like 5 years in and I was like, I'm not seeing that spark that I want to see, you know, that look that you're from the kids that you want. And a lot of it was I was looking at everything that we were focusing on, particularly in the state of Michigan, which was reading, writing, math, and kind of social studies and science fell behind. I wanted to kind of integrate more of the science because that was where I saw the most spark in my kids. When you were busy, you know, creating slime or melting ice or playing with snow even, that's when they were most alive for me. And so the Experiential STEM Conference that I went to really took teachers, and I'll just give you a brief example. It made you think about your instructional approach more than anything. It basically said, if you want to teach, let's say, velocity, here's a lesson that you can do. You can do a lesson any way that you want it, but then at the end of the day, you should go indoor skydiving. And so they took us indoor skydiving, and we had to calculate our own terminal velocity. And basically, we calculated it, and then we actually had to indoor skydive. And the cool thing about it was that you then got to see what your terminal velocity was. And so you looked at your calculation, then you looked at what your terminal velocity was, and then you were like, oh, well, I was off by this and I was off by that. But it really kind of opens your mind up to, hey, scientists and mathematicians really have to be on point with their numbers and their measurements, right? Mm-hmm. The attention to precision that's what's going to allow them to be successful in outer space, right? Because you can't make little mistakes up there. And so that was one. And the other one was about, you know, water testing. I was never, I don't like using the terms, but I was never really the science kid, if you will. Mm-hmm. I was more of the literature kid. I come from a family line of poets and journalists and things like that too. And so I loved writing. I never saw myself as a person who could get engaged in science. But then here I am at the Experiential STEM Conference and like, okay, you want to learn about water? Well, great. We're going to go whitewater rafting to this specific area and you're going to test that water. And that's exactly what we did. And so it gave you this kind of experience of saying, take your teaching and take your learning and give it an experiential twist to it in which it's still relevant, but the learning happens through the experience simultaneously with the content. And that's what led me into STEM. And it's forever changed everything about me. When I came back from that conference, I joined an administrative program in Dearborn and really worked to revamp and change my school into a STEAM-based school. And it was extremely successful and it was amazing.
I love that. I love the story of indoor skydiving and the whitewater rafting. And what I hear you saying with all of that is the experiential learning component gave the learning meaning. It made the data points and the measurements and the practices have meaning, you know, to be embedded within that context.
And then more than anything too, like I went to this conference, what was it, 10 years ago? I remember it all. Right. But I was at a conference, I think last year. I don't know if I remember everything about that conference, right? Because it was your typical sit down, attend a session, lecture, and leave and go to the next session, be kind of flooded with a lot of information and sitting down and taking as much notes as you can so that you can decompose those later. Not at the experiential conference. And that to me was a defining factor. What kind of classroom am I running? Am I running an experiential learning atmosphere, environment, or am I running a session where I'm drilling down content and hoping that at the end of the day, these kids decompose it and process it and hopefully keep it for long-term memory so that they're later assessed on it on standardized tests. You know what I mean? It's Absolutely. A testament to how just instruction within itself can be changing of the results.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting that you mentioned retention. When I became a STEM teacher, it was quite a transition. And I was moving from a self-contained teaching experience into, you know, teaching as a special area, working with 600 students weekly, working with all five or all six grade levels daily, and seeing students once a week. And I remember wondering, what is their retention going to be like week by week? And how much time are we going to need to spend in review and reactivating their prior knowledge? And I remember being blown away by the retention that students of all ages were coming with week by week. And I remember realizing that it was because they were learning through experience, through hands-on experience with the STEM projects and problems that we were working through.
Yeah, experiencing something. And studies have shown like your brain will retain what it experiences far more than it will if you're just hearing it, right? I can't remember the exact numbers, but you retain a certain percentage of what you hear, a certain percentage of what you see, a certain percentage of what you teach, and then a certain percentage of what you experience. And that experience is truly what solidifies things into long-term memory.
Right, absolutely. So I wanted to pivot over to your comment about gaps and holes. So as you were working through these different experiences, you started to notice some of the gaps and some of the equity issues. Can you unpack that a little bit? What exactly were you seeing and where do you see opportunities for us even now to get better?
So immediately getting into the field of education, there's a huge kind of disconnect that I noticed. And that is you walk out of the college classroom, you know, the college atmosphere, ready to teach. And there's this huge philosophy and you walked out learning this, you know, all these great things. And then you get into the classroom and it's not necessarily the reality. Mm-hmm. And so there's a huge disconnect between what, you know, universities are teaching and what schools are actually implementing. And so that was one that I immediately noticed. But then years later, as I started engaging and working more with industry and you know, working with PLTW or Code.org or any of the other industries, it just even companies that we were able to get affiliated with, you start to hear the things that that these industries are looking for. And they're very different than what public education is popping out, like we're pushing out of our schools. And so it's like, wait a minute, there's a disconnect between what university is teaching to these educators. We're sending them out into the classroom. They're learning a whole new different world of teaching over there. And then on top of that, industry is asking for something else. Hmm. And so all three entities are extremely important and they all need to speak to each other. Right. And mm-hmm. if not, what are we then really doing? How much, you know, how fluent are we in regards to, you know, pushing out the future job workforce and having people that are prepared? And then when you hear things like, you know, there are 2 million jobs, STEM jobs that are open in the U.S. right now and nobody can fill them. And you're finding out that, hey, just in the state of Michigan alone, we have approximately 15,000 jobs that are open to computer scientists and only 1,700 graduates that are going to be able to fill it. You start to see the gaps and holes everywhere. Students are not really necessarily being exposed to the STEM opportunities that are out there. We're not necessarily integrating the things that the industry is saying that's what they're looking for. We're not exposing our kids to these opportunities. And so it almost made me take a step back and say, wait a minute, is this a disservice? And so the gaps that are there and the disconnects can easily be fixed, though, I think, with dialogue and I think with unique professional development and training opportunities for teachers, in which they really do get, if you will, the experiential learning opportunity through their training. So looking at professional developments differently than we have, and even conferences, saying maybe, hey, teachers, you know, we're unique in Michigan. We have Ford Motor Companies. What happens if our teachers are able to go there for a half-day professional development or full-day professional development where they get to see firsthand the importance of being able to have students work together and collaborate in the 21st century skills really kind of manifesting in front of their faces and being able to look at that and then pull that back into their classroom. I think we have to get kind of creative the way we ask our students, hey, get creative about this as administrators and as leaders in the educational, 21st century educational platform. We have to look at ourselves and say, how creative are we in kind of pushing forth that kind of, that change and that practice into the classroom?
Yeah, absolutely. For any of the educators listening that may not have that direct line of sight to what, you know, industry professionals and companies are saying they need from the education system that the education system is not providing, what are some quick examples of a few of those gaps? And then what might be some easier ways, some lower lift ways that teachers, even individually, can start to move the needle in their own classrooms just a little bit?
Well, let me take that question one part at a time. So in your classroom, I think a really great resource for teachers is that the Discovery Education has these the STEM curriculum built around the 17 sustainable development goals. And those 17 sustainable development goals are basically, the United Nations has gotten together and said, these are the 17 goals we're going to focus on a global level. And teachers can easily, number one, they can use Discovery Education as a resource, but if they're not able to do that, they can also just look up the 17 Sustainable Development Goals and really start to push their lessons to address these things, giving students more of a global perspective. The moment you open students up to a global perspective, you're now asking them to solve problems that are bigger and allow for more openness, if you will, right? So there's no such thing as a bad idea. There's different ways to solve one particular problem. And so I recommend, just as a teacher, Googling the sustainable development goals, looking at the 17 issues on a global perspective, you know, such as no poverty, zero hunger, good health and well-being, quality education is one of them, gender equality. I mean, there's so many, and really kind of focusing our lessons on those, but then also reaching out to local businesses and local industries. Like in Michigan, we have Ford, but you have, you know, other computer science entities and engineering places that you have nearby that you can ask and ask to visit even, or share some of their outreach programs, because many, many businesses have them, including Stryker and so on and so forth. They have ways that they want to engage with the public, with public education. They necessarily don't know how to do it. And I don't think there's kind of a liaison in between industry and public education. It really does require some type of entity to be able to reach out and connect them. So you have those opportunities. But I also think too, like, just put yourself out there. Follow different people on Twitter. Expose yourself to new conferences and things like that. And I think it'll open up doors. Because like I said, once you open up one door, there's going to be so many others to open, and you can go wherever you want to go with it.
Yeah, I think what you just said there is maybe the best advice that you could probably give to kind of sum everything up, and that's just put yourself out there. Let me ask you, in your experience, and you even mentioned that, you know, on the part of industry, they're very eager to be involved with the school system, to get into classrooms, to be involved with teachers and students, but they don't always know how to take that first step. So for teachers who are taking that step and putting themselves out there, is there a wrong way for them to ask? Just asking that to maybe even put their minds at ease.
There is no wrong way to ask. There are so many different ways. You can send them emails. They have specific departments within their businesses that are specific to outreach. You can also tweet at them. Believe it or not, sometimes you tweet an author or you tweet a company and they will respond. It could be as simple as a tweet, an email, or giving somebody a call, inviting someone to come in, asking for an engineer to come in and share their story. But if they can't even do that, there are also all these virtual field trips. They're free virtual field trips that you can go on with Discovery Education. You can also Skype and reach out. I know Jane Goodall and a bunch of other people were reached out to, I think, via Twitter or something. And they were asked, like, hey, would you do a Skype interview and talk to our kids about it? And they were able to do that. And my whole point with all this is really kind of push for an outside perspective to come in. The moment that happens, you're now opening your classroom up, and it's like allowing, you know, opening a window and allowing this new breath of fresh air to come in. That right there immediately sends a message to students that your learning happens and it's not confined to these four walls. And it also says, hey, I, as your teacher and as your educator, also have room to grow and learn. And it's just modeling that idea of lifelong learning without necessarily saying, hey, you need to be a lifelong learner. You're modeling it by saying, hey, I'm your teacher. Guess what? We're going to Google, or we're going to Skype this particular astronaut, and we're going to talk to them, or we're going to talk to these people from NASA, or these people in the biology department. There's so many. I mean, it's so endless. I can't even begin to tell you. You do simple things like that. Bring them into your classroom, whether it's virtually or in person. Write letters, you know, advocate, push, expose. My students 1 year created a video and we sent it out. I mean, just asking questions and people will respond. There are people that are extremely passionate about their jobs and they're extremely passionate about their careers and they want to share that with the world. And all they need is an invitation.
Super powerful. I love all of that. And I love the picture that you painted with opening a window. When, you know, how do we bring our students beyond the four walls of the classroom, beyond the walls of their school? I mean, you just listed off great ways to get that ball rolling. Let's start talking about your new project, Coding Out of Poverty. Can you tell me a little bit about what you're doing there and how you're doing it?
Yeah, so it's still fresh in you know, the making. So it's still coming out, but it's we're working on it. Coding Out of Poverty is basically a nonprofit organization focused on using the STEAM platform to empower people from around the world to grow themselves on the 21st century stage, if you will, to create change, opportunity, and growth. So it's kind of empowering people with the tools in the STEM fields to grow themselves out of any situation that they're in. And we're hoping to make it a global platform so that students in Yemen can perhaps one day be empowered to create their own grids for electricity, to create systems for clean water, or people in Flint, Michigan can do the same, or people in, you know, certain places in Africa to create windmills that can give them green energy sources and so on and so forth. But really hoping to get this organization up and going so that students and people across all different types of you know, identifications and spectrums and races and religions and faiths and languages, really kind of working to solve real world problems that would then impact the world. We're hoping to do that basically through self-motivated, hands-on, student-centered learning approaches that provide kind of STEAM learning opportunities to those who otherwise would not have them. And we're working to cultivate the next generation of innovators and problem solvers. And also to use it as a way to bridge the fundamental skills, educational, geographic, and demographic gaps in the STEAM fields. And hopefully all this could be done through routine STEAM exposure and experience. You know, a lot of the studies that we've been reading now really kind of show that the reason more people go into these STEM and STEAM fields is not because they possess some, you know, amazing skill that they were born with, but it all comes down to experience and exposure. Mm. You know, you've given them the opportunity, then that's how they choose to pursue it. But when I think about some of the students I used to work with in Hamtramck, Detroit, or the South End of Dearborn, those opportunities are not necessarily given. And I would argue that sometimes people view STEM and STEAM-based education as something that you give to as an incentive or a growth opportunity for those that are highest achieving. And I would argue that your most vulnerable and those that are kind of struggling in language development, things like that, need that platform more than others because they're able to showcase their knowledge through the projects that they create, more so than having to, you know, a standardized assessment or some language assessment to tell you. They can show you through these platforms. Their real world experience is so unique. I mean, I remember some of my refugee kids coming in and they couldn't speak a word of English, but my God, they could charge a cell phone with a potato. and that just says so much. I mean, they would talk right to me about how they had to charge their cell phones with potatoes because they didn't have electricity. And, you know, as bombs were going off, this was their way of communicating. And their real world experiences build a type of resilience and grit and creativity that I think any other setting wouldn't necessarily apply. You know, they say necessity is the mother of all invention, mm-hmm. you know?
That's right.
And these kids have lived that life. And so it really is. It's just a platform that I'm extremely passionate about and push forth. And hopefully through Coding Out of Poverty, we're going to be able to do that.
Goodness, I love what you guys are doing. And I could not agree more that STEM and STEAM and problem-based, project-based experiential learning needs to be available to every student, every child. And it is a powerful mechanism for leveling the playing field. I want to ask you to unpack a little bit the benefit of reaching a global audience beyond just the benefits of accessibility and equity. So looking beyond accessibility, what benefit does a global platform have for even students in the US?
Well, I think being a person, so I have this motto that I live by, and it's even my Instagram like handle, and it's learn, teach, travel, repeat. And I live by that. And I grew up in I grew up as a world traveler. I was blessed to have parents who traveled with us globally and encouraged us to constantly live outside the box. But I think that's extremely important, but not everyone has that opportunity, right? But that opportunity teaches you to open your mind and your heart to people in a way that is authentic and filled with empathy and understanding and openness. And so this by default makes you a more inclusive person. It's not something that you have to work for almost. You know, we spend so much time and money on having these inclusive professional developments and teaching people kind of the specific words that they should use. And whereas I think the investment should go in actual real world inclusive experiences where these people are learning as they're experiencing. But, you know, going through that worldly experience, you start to think about things very differently. You start to create and seek inclusive in events and situations because you recognize that different ways people identify, communicate, and, you know, collaborate is extremely important. And you become sensitive to culture and customs in a way that is almost blended into your very own life. And so in education, regardless of what anyone says, teaching is an emotional job. It requires love, dedication, patience, understanding, and to a certain extent, sacrifice. You know, being an educator, you have to create inclusive learning environments and opportunities that allow for students to showcase all parts of themselves. And when you allow someone to showcase who they are and to use their individuality in their job or in their classroom, right? You are allowing them to feel whole. And people who feel whole are able to produce more. It's just how we as humans work, right? So think about, you know, when people get together to solve problems and make changes, they can create more inclusive and they can create a more inclusive and accepting world in which we view each other through the lens of humanity, where differences are not, they're an asset, not a burden. And so I look at the global platform and I think to myself, there's so many lines that are already drawn, right? We have, you know, each country has its own lines. We have our own boundaries, but we also have, you know, the World Wide Web. You have the internet that now opens you up to all these different places and people. And the more you expose yourself to people from the outside, the more you learn about yourself and the more you start to learn about what you do and do not know. And then you start to view learning as a lifelong process. I think we have it sometimes backwards now because we're trying to teach people to be lifelong learners. We try to emphasize, let's teach lifelong learning. Let's teach grit. Let's teach, you know, inclusive mindset. Let's teach diversity. Where I like to look at it as, how about we engage on a global level? And that within itself is going to engrave in us what inclusivity is, what it means to be accepting of other people, what it means to be a lifelong learner. It doesn't have to be taught at that point. It becomes who you are. And working on an international platform, I've learned that that's something in America that we don't necessarily have a grasp of. You know, when I'm in the Eastern Hemisphere and I'm in the Middle East or I'm in even very poor countries like Yemen, people's perspective about learning is very different. It's more open to global a global perspective. And I wish to bring that back here for that reason, because I think after that, you've, you know, knocked off half the problems that you have. You don't have to then teach inclusivity. You don't have to teach diversity. Mm-hmm. You don't have to teach lifelong learning, because that's the type of people you're going to have.
You're going back to the power of experiential learning, right? I mean, that's exactly what you're talking about, is let's go out and have the experiences ourselves. And kind of check all those boxes in one fell swoop. What would you recommend for educators, for administrators, you know, along these lines? Would you recommend they travel outside the U.S. as much as possible, you know, join global conferences? What are some of the, I mean, that might be really difficult for a lot of folks. And you touched on it a little bit just a moment ago, but maybe call out some of the ways that educators can start to do these things and really model that for their students and kind of bring those ideals and those mindsets instinctively and naturally into their classrooms.
So there's like a variety of different things administrators and school districts can do. And I have to give a shout out to Scott Graydon, who's the superintendent at Saline Area Schools. When I was working in Saline, I had an opportunity to go to the Global Education Supplies and Solutions Conference in Dubai. And it was something that was offered to me as an educator. It was some of the stuff that I had been doing beforehand. But as a superintendent, he absolutely supported it and was like, you know what, Wydad, go. If that's what's going to grow you and that's what's going to help you, you know, grow your intellect and your perspective and growth, absolutely go do it. So to have an administrator and to have someone that looks at you and says, absolutely, I encourage your growth, because I ultimately understand that you growing as an individual is going to grow our students and our district, that's extremely powerful. And that within itself is an open mindset, right? Mm. I look at administrators and district administrators, both on a building and a district level. And I want to say kind of two things. Number one, I understand the fear, because we do have a culture of fear. I believe in the American educational system, we as teachers fear, you know, evaluations, and we fear new standards and changes and things like that. And then administrators also have their fears, which is funding cuts and you know, different changes and ways that they're going to have to come back and find new innovative ways to restructure their organizations and new laws that are being passed and finding ways to trickle those down. And then you have parents who are in fear of new grading skills, the changing educational platform that's different than from what they've had, right? Mm-hmm. And students are in fear because they're in fear of the demands of the future. They don't know if they're ready, you know, for what's coming, especially when you're talking about, you know, global competition in a global society. We as a nation are kind of secluded in our own area, right? And so you have a culture of fear, and I get that fear. But I really want to say to administrators is stop looking for pockets of excellence and look to excel everyone, even if it's slower in the beginning. And I know, you know, administrators and districts want to be recognized for all these different things because, you know, that's how you get known and that's how you get your ratings, but push for more opportunities that grow the masses. So that's one. And when I say that, I mean, not just your students. Invest in your teachers. If a teacher is interested, if your language arts teacher is interested in learning about STEM, allow her that individual growth, right? If you have a mathematics teacher who's interested in ways to integrate technology or engineering, allow him or her that individual growth. Invest in your teachers in a way that allows them to find their own unique voice, just as you would tell a teacher to help a student find their own, right? Mm-hmm. And the other part of it is kind of on the other end of the spectrum, which is for me, diversify your staff across all levels. Inclusion cannot be preached and not practiced. And particularly for minorities, we look for the walk. We don't listen to the talk. Mm-hmm. And so we look for diversity on all levels. We're looking for age, experience, race, faith, identity. Representation matters, and it has an impact on your staff just as much as it has on your students. And so we look for that. If you want to see inclusion, diversify your staff, and you'll see how quickly daily practices and protocols change. And when people from all different walks of life get together to work on a common goal, you inevitably create an environment that is open to change, rich in ideas, accepting of differences, and ultimately it maximizes your growth. And I think of just myself. I mean, I'm just a nobody. I'm just one person. But I think of all the different people I know on a global level. I mean, Fly with Hafa is a friend of mine that I've used in my classroom, who opened up a YouTube, you know, channel that preaches love and acceptance to all people. And she travels the world. And I've shared that with my students. And they follow her and they listen to her stories. And, you know, it just, my own unique perspective and the people that I know have now been passed on to at least 60 kids for the past 2 years, mm-hmm. and they're able to now connect. And so thinking about that idea of 6 degrees of separation and that diversity is so important, because it's not just about race and religion and language. It's also about experience, and you diversify kind of the intellect, and you just, your ideas become far more rich as a district. And so I would just recommend that they push themselves out there and diversify their staff, and then maybe find one or two, like the GESS conference in Dubai. They hold it in Mexico and in Africa and different places. Push yourself to go 1 year as administrators. You know, they have these administrative retreats. How about you invest to go on one of those and put yourself in a position where you are out of your element, where you're on shaky ground, and that you're forced to learn in the same experiential way that maybe a student who just came to this country would have to learn, and reinvigorate that learning process within you.
I'm curious, and this is just a maybe off topic question, but I would love to know, looking back over your last, you know, many years, several years, what's an obvious truth that you see that many or most people don't?
I think especially as I've gotten older, I've really come to see the inequities, and I've really started to kind of become more conscious of groups of people who either intentionally or unintentionally are almost oppressed in a way through systemic practices or things that may not even be intentional, things that we do as part of a process that we don't realize are actually almost detrimental to a group of people. I think about, you know, students that I've had and met that were part of the LGBTQ community, or, you know, some of my Jewish and Muslim students, or my African American students, my Latino students. And I think about, wow, you know, there were things I could have done maybe a little bit differently that could have been a little more inclusive that I wasn't necessarily aware of. And I'd like to think that I've always tried to be an inclusive person, but maybe a lot allotted for more opportunities. And I think that there, when we start to recognize that there are some inequities within our platforms, that's where change is going to happen. I think sometimes it is a hard pill to swallow and to recognize that maybe our practices are not what's best. They are not best practices. And as great as we think they are, they may require change and reflection. It isn't until you really take a step back and you really look at yourself and you say, I don't know it all, and I'm here to learn just as much as I am to teach, that the platform becomes a little more different and you're more accepting of change, and your opportunities for students become more open. And I think you start to see more results from students on even a more human level and just more engagement on that level. And so I don't know, you know, every day I'm an evolving person. My philosophies tend to change. I rarely ever kind of speak in absolutes when it comes to things anymore. I've learned to, you know, to stop and think and say, you know what, there could be relevance into something like that that I may not be aware of. And so just keeping myself open and really kind of pushing myself to continue learning, teaching, and traveling is hopefully a lifetime goal until I can't do it anymore.
And modeling it for others along the way, right?
Definitely.
As we start to wrap up, I'd love to ask you, who are you giving an A to these days?
Number one, I want to give an A to the kids out there. I think our new generation of students, we don't give them much credit. You know, we talk about millennials and we talk about things that they can't do that we used to do. And I'm constantly seeing posts and things about, you know, these are the things we did as children. Now look at these kids. And I don't think we give them credit for how number one, different the times are and how well they're able to navigate that system and the new world that we're in. But I also want to recognize how much more open they are in mind and spirit. And I think they're going to lead us in that direction. I feel like what led me to where I am today is my kids. It's my little five-year-olds that I had that I was trying to spark up, you know, and they led me here. And so forever, I will give them an A for the things that they do. I got to give an A to Saline Area Schools, the last district that I worked with. Just, I've learned so much from their administration and the resilience of their teachers and their parents too. They're a great district that I've learned the true power of parent and school involvement. That just, it was so amazing to see. And lately they've had this huge effort to become more inclusive and diverse and equitable. And I have to note that because my kids now go to that district and I have minority kids. And their investment in 21st century learning is kind of a testament to the value that they place on continuous growth and lifelong learning. And they kind of carry that same philosophy that I have, which is remain at the forefront of change and, you know, don't let it drag you, but be at the forefront of it. And then I just, you know, an A to kind of you and all the other people out there, women, minorities that are really kind of pushing themselves to the forefront at a time in where I think we all feel maybe a little shaken. But I think we can, you know, seeing that perseverance and seeing people like you and other women and minorities really pushing and leading and saying, this is the change we want to see in the world. That to me, you know, gets an A++.
So good. Moving forward, you know, with your work, with coding out of poverty, with the rest of the things that you're doing, how can people get connected with you? How can they follow your work? How can they get connected with that work?
So Coding Out of Poverty has a website that's being launched soon. So it's www.codingoutofpoverty.com. But they can follow me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is my first name and last name. It's Wydad Lookman. I have a Facebook called Teach Lookman. If they want, they can go there. And then my Instagram is kind of my living, breathing visual portfolio of all the things that I like to do that I hope through images are able to just spark ideas. So they can follow me on Instagram at Learn, Teach, Travel, Repeat. It's all one word. Yeah, but they can contact me through that too. And if there's anything I can ever help any educator or administrator kind of push forward, and I'd be more than happy to, you know, changing the world one person, one student, one teacher, one administrator at a time. It's my passion. It's what I love. So yeah.
Absolutely. I'll make sure that we have all those links in the show notes. And Wydad, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for sharing your experience and your wisdom. And I've just enjoyed it thoroughly.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Off the Assembly Line. Since Wydad and I recorded this conversation, her website, codingoutofpoverty.com, has gone live and is ready for you to go check out. You can follow them on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter as well, and I'll have all that info for you in the show notes. Next week, I'll be talking with Julia Freeland Fisher, Director of Education at the Christensen Institute and author of the book, Who You Know, which tackles the student opportunity gap by uncovering the crucial X factor. It is essential reading for every educator, parent, and professional invested in long-term student success. So mark your calendars for Tuesday, November 5th. You will not want to miss it. If you're enjoying Off the Assembly Line, the best ways to support the show are to rate and review or share it with your network. Go to offtheassemblyline.co for show info or to send me your thoughts and questions. Until next time, go make a ruckus.